Welcome back to Word Up with Dani Katz. I am your host, Dani Katz. I am an author, journalist, and a quantum languaging coach and consultant. What that means is that I teach people how language programs consciousness, how language programs reality at large, and how to transform reality and evolve our consciousness with language. I've also been known to cultivate and share an opinion or two or 12 about culture and consciousness and how they are evolving, devolving, and being manipulated by the powers that were. Here at Word Up, we are devoted to fostering critical thinking while supporting you in becoming your most authentic, empowered, liberated, realized, amazing version of yourself. Our every show aims to expand your consciousness, raise your frequency, sharpen your critical thinking skills, and make you giggle. And think. Given the radical uptick in censorship over the past few years, combined with the complete co-opting slash decimation of my own personal industry, journalism, I started Word Up to have a free speech-friendly platform in which to engage exploratory, solutions-based conversations with visionaries, mystics, original thinkers, and rebel badasses who are helping to make the world more wonderful. The first half of my interviews run between 30 to 90 minutes and are always posted here for free public listening. The second halves are reserved for paid supporters on my Patreon and my Locals platforms, where for as little as $5 a month, you can access all of my second half conversations along with oodles of other bonus content and opportunities to drop in with me, to drop in with our High Vibe tribe, and lots of other awesome things. In addition to interviews, Word Up also features quantum languaging upgrades, planetary service announcements, and propaganda analysis, which I call Spot the Propaganda. Thank you so much for tuning in and for sharing your sacred attention with me and our High Vibe tribe of change makers. Be sure to click that subscribe button so you can stay abreast of our every episode. Thank you for also clicking the like button, for sharing far and wide, and for leaving some kind words as a review as you are authentically inspired. As well, if you are gleaning any value whatsoever from these shows, consider supporting me on Locals and or Patreon. And as you are wanting to learn more about my quantum languaging coaching and consulting services or nab copies of my books, find me on DaniKatz.com as well as on quantumlanguaging.com. Okay, I think that's it for our housekeeping. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy this episode of Word Up with Dani Katz. Hey, superstars, welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Dani Katz. Today, I am joined by author, podcaster, and recent Anarchapulco MC, Charlie Robinson. Charlie is the author of The Octopus of Global Control and a number of other books that he has written solo and that he's co-written with Jeff Berwick. He is also the host of the Macro Aggressions podcast, which is one of my favorites. Today we dive into bail-in legislation. Basically, we just dive into the current state of Rome's fall, of Rome making an ass of itself and all of the details therein. Before we dive in, I'm reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, and to buckle up and prepare to enjoy my conversation with Charlie Robinson. Thanks for being so punctual.
I'm always pretty punctual.
Are you a Virgo?
I am a Libra.
Oh, so you get along well with others.
I do get along well with others, I think.
That's such a great skill set to have.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I try to stay out of the nonsense and I suppose that maybe that's why they had me host in Acapulco this year. I get along with everybody.
Was that the first time you hosted?
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't the first time I'd been a speaker there, but it was the first time that I had hosted. And yeah, you know what? Now that's funny that you say that. Now, because when she introduced me to the stage, she said something along those lines about how that I was I worked well with others and I got along with everybody. Now I'm thinking
I
maybe
think
it's less me and more my astrological sign.
it's a combination, but I think it's rare among our people because we're all such like disruptive rebels.
I know. I know. I've tried to let people know that when it comes to like working with other people, I'm a collaborator, not a competitor. I mean, I have a massive distrust for like the media, the entertainment industry, and all that. Those people I won't collaborate with. But with inside the alternative media and the people that I know and the writers and podcasters and people like that, I feel like I work well with them, and I think that if we all worked together, we'd be in a much better place than the people that want to fight with each other and have some sort of ideological situation going on, or they're jealous at no. I want to let's make this pie bigger. I'm not trying to take your slice of pie. I want to just let's make the whole thing bigger for all of us, right? And if we work together, I think we can do that. So yeah, I'm a collaborator.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, of course, I have a bajillion ways for us to go today, but I'm also wondering, like, is anything top of mind? Anything you're super like jazzed for us to dive into?
No. I'll let you drive. I'm good to go wherever you want to go. And I'm fired up and pissed off as I usually am, but I'll try to keep it within reason.
No need. You can go
I can.
full force on my show.
Okay.
Well, I
No,
kind of
I'm good with whatever. I'm
Okay, well, you just mentioned something that, of course, I want to pick up because I've heard this in the alt media community because there was a lot of infighting that erupted over the past 2 years over the like virus, no virus.
Right.
And there are a lot of people I notice in the community who are like, tired of being accused of being controlled opposition and we should all just be working together and you're hurting the movement. And I'm like, yeah, but if you're controlled opposition, then I do think we would be wise to call that out so that you don't
Oh my
lead
God.
people down the cliff. So, what's your take on the controlled opposition in alt media?
Well, there's a funny sort of term that I've been hearing lately, the mainstream alternative media. David Icke has been talking about that quite a bit. And
Yep.
David Icke, I interviewed while I was at Anarchapulco. We talked a little bit about that. So it's pretty obvious that a decision has been made to go away from television media, news, the traditional mainstream media there, everybody's getting their information online. I think that the mainstream corporate press that runs television channels, they understand that. So because everybody's going online, they're not just going to allow people to like find whatever information they want. They want to control online. That's so you see like the YouTubes of the world that you go in and you go, oh, I want to find I'm just going to pull it up and see what's in what's going on YouTube or wherever. And you're like CNBC, CNN stories, NBC stories. You're like, what is this? This is just the mainstream on YouTube. I'm not looking for this. I don't want this. And there's become sort of a segment that is like the acceptable alternative media. And that's what David Icke is calling the mainstream alternative media. And it's these people that are talking about the things that we were talking about. But they're talking about them now at a time and place where it's safer. They're not talking about COVID 3 years ago like we were. They're talking about it now. And now they're like, we're going to blow the lid on all this stuff. It's like, you're late. You're late to the party. And so it's part of it are the people that are in this mainstream alternative media. But the key indicator is, yeah, they're talking about the things that we have always wanted the media to talk about it, but it's about timing because it doesn't do you any good to talk about how masks are nonsense now. That conversation needed to happen in 2020. And the fact that these people were unwilling or unable to either figure it out or they weren't allowed to talk about it back then, that doesn't do me any good. That doesn't help me. I don't consider them to be truth tellers. They're safe truth tellers, you know, in the sense that they're talking about it now, but now it won't get you thrown off of YouTube. Now it won't get you thrown off of it. Now it won't get you kicked out of school or your university, or it won't get you fired from your job. Back then it would. So I don't have any respect for the, you know, like Tucker Carlson is talking about all this stuff. Isn't this amazing? Yeah, but where was this conversation in 2021? Oh, well, he wasn't having it then. Well, that's when we needed it. You want to impress me? Have the conversation the second it needs to be had, not 18 months later when it feels safe. So David Icke is right. There is a mainstream alternative media. And they are talking about the things that we'd like them to talk about. But it doesn't matter now. You have to talk about these at the moment when they're the most polarizing, when they will get you you know, it doesn't, you can't talk about, you want to talk about the Canadian truckers right now? I'm not impressed. Talk about them while you were out there, while it was happening, when you were, if you were interviewing people and talking about that, when you were getting demonetized, when they were shutting down your bank accounts for talking about this stuff, when PayPal was shutting people down. Those people that talked about it at that time, I'm willing to listen to them. The people that come parachuting in two or 3 years after the fact, you're no help to us now. This is obvious. This is your, we did your job for you. So I think that, you know, look, on the one hand, I guess I'll take whatever sort of victory there is. If it's a victory of people not watching the mainstream media, good. They shouldn't be watching that. They should be checking out what's going on in the alternative media. But even within that area, there needs to, there's differentiation between the content, the creators of the content, what they're saying, what they're allowed to say, and most importantly, when they say it.
Completely. And I always wonder who's propping them up because, like you just said, they're saying things that would have gotten us, you know, deleted or censored or whatnot. I'm still having those issues. I'm watching, you know, Russell Brand and Brett Weinstein talk about the things that keep getting me strikes, you know, and then I'm looking at Brett's position on the Consilience Project, which is propped up by Santa Fe Institute. And it's like, it seems like they're trying to steer us towards another psyop. And I feel like at this point, if you're not a conspiracy theorist, if you don't understand the octopus of global control, then don't talk about any of these things because it's going to be reductive. And these people, like, if they are well-intended, they don't understand like the larger kind of meta landscape. So I just feel like there's a lack of humility, even if they're not controlled, even if they're not being propped up by the bad guys. Where's the humility? And where's the deference and the respect for those of us who are at the forefront from the get-go?
Yeah, I agreed. And I think if we're waiting around for this group of people to show us the respect that we have earned, I think we'll be waiting a long time. I don't know that they're wired to do that. I think they're competitors. I think they're the ones that are in this competitive market. They don't really care about the alternative media. They care about dominating their, you know, their channel, doing the best that it possibly can. And it does feel very unfair where you get some people, like I just get, since you mentioned Rumble, you mentioned Russell Brand, you know, he's got a channel on Rumble, and he can talk about all these things and he can make a fortune doing that. I have a channel on Rumble too, and I've had it for only 5 months, and I've made a grand total of $8.61 on it in 5 months. So yeah, thank you. I know it's a lot. That's success in
You're
this
gonna buy some
industry.
Bitcoin with that.
I mean, really. So one of the things that they do is they allow certain voices to be elevated, and they allow everyone else to be suppressed. And they can do that a variety of ways. I mean, listen, if you think that if the people that get out of YouTube, and I had been on YouTube, and they go to Rumble, and I have a channel on Rumble as well, so I put myself kind of in this category. But if you don't understand who the largest financier of Rumble is, Peter Thiel, a guy with all of his military industrial complex connections. He started Palantir, one of the most dangerous companies in the world. That's not the solution either. You know what I mean? Like it can't. Now I'll put my stuff wherever I can put it, because I feel like I have to plant seeds everywhere because they don't, you know, I can water them if I'd like, but YouTube won't let me grow. I mean, I've just been thrown off of there so many times that there's no point anymore. Rockfin is great, but it can only do so much. Odyssey, same thing. It's small. I put stuff on Rumble and nobody watches it.
Yeah,
Nobody, you know, they just
I'm
don't allow,
completely
they just,
with you.
it's, it doesn't get seen by the people that it should get seen by. And on top of that, when you dig into the analytics behind it, then there's this whole new layer of deception, which is monetized views. Shows, videos that you put up that are eligible for monetization. Now, you would think if you put your video up on Rumble and you monetize it, that video would be eligible for monetization. But what you find is like maybe one out of every 80 clicks that they get, they say that one's eligible for monetization, but the other 79 aren't. And you go, why? And they go, because it's just the way we do it. And you go, wait a second. So I'm monetized for ad revenue, but the video that's monetized, 95% of the views it gets, you just arbitrarily decide that they're not eligible for ads, so you're not running ads on them? Well, we're running ads on them. We're just not paying you for it. And you're like, explain this to me like I'm an idiot, because I'm having a hard time understanding what the difference is in the. So they're not eligible to be monetized for me, but they're eligible to be monetized for Rumble. So you guys don't have a problem collecting revenue on it. Why am I not allowed to? Well, because they're not eligible for you. Why? Because we said so.
Is there any sort of transparency around what renders a video eligible? Like, do they have that printed anywhere?
I've
This is
never been able to
where
get a straight answer on anything.
this is
So.
the piece that annoys me even more than the tyrannical enslavement coming in is the weaponization of customer service and the fact that it
Ooh.
doesn't exist anymore.
It really doesn't. Now, to be clear, I'm not basing my life around making money off of Rumble. It's really kind of irrelevant. But more than anything, I kind of monetized it to see, like, as a science experiment, to see what would happen. I'd heard people talking about this. They're 100% correct in their assessment of it. So again, I mean, I knew people that had YouTube channels back in 2016, 2017, 20, you know, that before the monetization purge happened, and these people were making a really decent living doing this, a very nice living, and they've choked all that off. So you cannot make money in the alternative media by putting your videos out. You just can't. You have to be. You just can't. There's no market there. The only way you can make money is if you do live streaming and you get super chats or something like that. But even then, if you do that on YouTube takes half the money. And if you do it on Rumble, again, I know people that live stream on Rumble that I'm subscribed to, and I can go to Rumble and pull up all the live shows that are going on right now, and their show won't be on it. It just won't be on it. Even though I maybe follow a dozen shows or like on Rumble, and I pull up what's on live right now, there's two dozen options there. You'd think that my dozen channels that I follow, that, you know, if one of them was live, it would be there. They're not. They're not, just not even suggested to people. So freedom of speech, but not freedom of reach,
Right. Thank you,
as they
ADL.
say. Yeah, exactly.
I was suspicious of the Rumble op from the get-go because I don't trust Russell Brand for 2.5 seconds. So when it was like, oh, another celebrity sex scandal to distract us, I'm like, okay, cue the op. I got thrown off of YouTube. I'm losing my financial support. It's like, aren't you a millionaire? Billionaire Hollywood celebrity, and then you're driving everyone to Rumble. I've been hearing from friends that they've gotten stuff taken down from Rumble for months. Same with the whole X thing. Like, I'm more suppressed there now that Elon's taken over than before. But I
He can't
will
be fair.
say I love Odyssey because they have customer service and they have the unlisted option
that none of the others have. But even on YouTube, to monetize, it's like the only way to do it is to turn on multi-factor authentication. And it's like everything is a squeeze that's going to pull you deeper into the enslavement construct, where I'm like, no, I won't. My freedom is too valuable. It's not an option.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have to give up your freedom if you want to make some money on these platforms. That's what they say. Yeah, I haven't heard about the Rumble taking videos down yet, but I also haven't asked around. I'm sure that probably is happening. And as for X, I get banned, not banned, but I get suppressed on there so much. And again, I know it sounds like a bunch of people complaining about all this stuff. Look, I just want a level playing field. I want the best content to win. And when you do, they do things like that where it's like, you have put like shackles on all of my stuff. Why, you know, why is it that dangerous? Is my information incorrect? If it's incorrect, then slap a community notes on me if you'd like to, but the information is not. I'm not out here talking about nonsense. Actually, if I were talking about nonsense, they'd probably allow me to do it. If I was talking about how I saw Bigfoot in aisle 5 at the local Walmart, those videos would go mega viral. They let me talk about that stuff all day long. The minute I start talking about vaccines, oh, it's like you get put into a camp where you just, nobody can see you, where I'm talking to the same 40 people. You know, and I don't have a massive audience, but it's 17,000 people that follow me that have the potential to hear my stuff. For me to put something out and to get 4 likes on it, it's just mathematically inconsistent with reality. It just doesn't seem like that's how it should work. And yet that's how it is. Facebook's even worse. I don't even bother with them. I mean, I just kind of gave up. And you know, and I thought I hated the media before I got into this, but I mean, these days, whether it's social media, mainstream media, whatever this new version of the alternative media that's coming up, man, it's all feeling very disgusting at a time when we really, really desperately need good information as we get into 2024, the tail end of it, you know, as we get into the second half. I mean, I feel like things are going to get so weird. You're really going to want to know what's actually going on, but they can't have that.
And are you thinking the end of 2024 is going to get weird because of the election, or are you foreseeing other realms of fuckery?
Well, I mean, it's all on the table. I would say the election doesn't help, and the elections are going on worldwide too. There's quite a few countries that are having elections during this year. And of course we know, like, you don't have to be a political analyst to know that Joe Biden has a tough road ahead of him. He's unlikable and practically dead, and his policies are incompatible with American views, and the people that support him are the type of people that you wouldn't want to be friends with. So I think that the elections are going to be part of it. I think really the biggest factor is the economic instability, because that's one of those things that it can, you know, Election Tuesday is on the calendar. You know when that's going to be.
Right.
You know the lead up to it. You know when it ends, and then you know kind of what happens in the tail end of that. So that's all on the schedule. But an economic collapse really isn't. And that's one of those things where it's the most dangerous game of musical chairs ever. You know, you know in the back of your mind, you're waiting for that music to stop and you're kind of eyeing all the chairs. Well, in this scenario, the music's not going to stop. They're going to pull one chair out. They're going to pull all the chairs out.
Right.
And that is going to be chaos. And I could envision a scenario in which they just kind of acknowledge that Biden can't win, because he can't win. And they recognize that Trump can win, because he can. And they let him win, because he's going to. And then they rug pull the economy right as he gets into office,
right,
and make him deal with that for the next couple of years. You know, keep him busy with asymmetric warfare where they're just coming at him from every angle. I mean, we've already seen that recently. We know that that's a tactic that they'd want to use, but a collapse of the economy would would be something, first of all, they could pin it on him. Not whether it would be his fault or not, doesn't matter. The media would pin it on him. And they could get you to a point where you're focused on that instead of the crimes over the last couple of years that these people should rightly be prosecuted for. So I'm more concerned about, I mean, it's always political theater and elections are always a contentious time and there's always some fuckery that goes on a couple weeks beforehand. So I would count on all of that as we usually do. But then on top of it, it feels like, I mean, last time around in 2020, we had the very big uncertainty and the gray area surrounding COVID. Now in 2024, we could have a situation where the uncertainty in the lead up is just the economy falls apart, you know, but I think that they would probably wait until Trump got, if it were up to them, and it might be out of their hands, to be honest. But if it were up to them, I think they'd want Trump to be in before that happened. So if that were the case, then maybe 2025 is the year when all this stuff actually kicks off. But it doesn't matter because either way, we're going to continue to see massive problems with the southern border. That's not getting fixed anyway. And the economy. The economy is in shambles. And they're desperately trying to get you to think that it's not. But it's like, you know, most people don't recognize, like, and they don't know, like, if the stock market's doing well, that only really impacts about the top 10% of Americans. But when groceries have doubled, everybody that shops notices that, except for the top 10% that aren't price sensitive to it. So the big majority of people are going to be like, the economy is a disaster. Like, they're going to be the ones that recognize it and feel it the most in the lead up to it. And it's undeniable. I was at the grocery store a couple of days ago and it was like, it's staggering how expensive everything is. So the economy makes me the most concerned. The election, I think I've already factored in to my brain the uncertainty of just the election happening the end of this year. And I just know that that's going to happen and I know when it's going to happen. And then I know when it's going to be over. The economic side, though, that's just such a, because Jeff and I were writing about this back in 2020, and we were saying that, like, you know, this whole thing is a house of cards. You think that it's so stable, but, like, you really only need one reckless bank, like a Deutsche Bank or Credit Suisse or somebody that screws up on their derivatives side of things, on their derivatives books, which are by all accounts $2 quadrillion of derivative bets between all these banks. You get one of these banks that's a little bit sloppy or too aggressive or undercapitalized or whatever, like Deutsche Bank already is, and they can take down everything. So it's like, and that was 2020. And we saw what happened with them papering over with a lot of money to try to hide the problems or anything. Well, again, that's like putting it on your credit card. At some point, the bill comes due. And is it going to be this year? Well, the signs kind of point to it being sometime around this year. So when you combine that with an election, I get very uncomfortable. I'm sure you do too.
Do you think they're also going to pull the fake alien disclosure this year? And then there's also this, like, looming World War III situation.
Yeah, you know, the fake alien part is, I know that, like, the first time people hear that, they go, oh, get out of here. You guys are crazy. You go, no. Let me explain to you who Wernher von Braun was. He was the guy that led NASA. He's the guy who founded NASA. He was the head of the V2 program for the Nazis back in World War II, and he's the one that talked to his assistant Carol Rawson and said that the last card that they would play would be the fake alien invasion card. Now, of course, when you're saying that in the early 70s, when you're on your deathbed, everyone's like, "Well, I mean, maybe, I guess it could be." I don't. He would, you know, would he have been in the meetings? Yeah, he would. He'd have been in the meetings if they were really talking about that. And so, is that a possibility? The fake alien invasion? Yeah, I'll tell you why it's a possibility. I go back to a video that was made in 2010 by a company called Magic Leap, and people saw it. It was shot in a high school gymnasium, middle school gymnasium, packed with kids all in the stands of like a basketball court in the middle. And they set up their technology around the edges of this basketball court, and they made it look like a humpback whale was jumping out of the floor, breaching, turning on its side, and splashing water into the crowd. And all the kids jumped back in horror because they thought they were going to be splashed by this life-size whale that had just magically come out of the floor. That's 2010, okay, when that came out, that technology. The company, Magic Leap, that made that technology for that presentation, the technology that is at least a decade and a half old by as of now, is a partner of the World Economic Forum. So I think it's important to keep an eye on that as a concept of a fake alien invasion and not be overly dismissive of that. Because the first time you hear it, it's easy to go, that sounds crazy. Because I would agree, it sounds crazy. But just, I think we understand the mentality of these people. They, when they're losing control, anything's on the table. Because the way they see it, they go into short-term thinking the way when they scare us with COVID and things like that, they want us to go into short-term thinking so that, you know, oh, we might die today. I'm not going to worry about tomorrow. I'll give up my rights today because I just need to stay alive today. I'll worry about tomorrow. We would make short-term thinking. When they feel like the wheels are coming off, they're going to make short-term decisions as well, which is screw it. Launch the fake alien invasion. Just a couple years too early for it, you know? The technology is running. People come out and they go, fuck is this? This is stupid. This is... Oh, the aliens are coming? These are the aliens that are coming? What are we doing here? This is nonsense.
Right.
If you're wrong on the fake alien invasion, it's the end of government. Okay? Nobody will ever... You think you have a problem. You think you have the IRS, you're going to hire 87,000 additional agents to collect tax revenue, you're going to get $0.00 from the people. You just pulled a fake alien invasion on the American people. Nobody will pay their taxes. Immediately, the government is completely obsolete. And I think that at that point, they will probably handcuff people, take them out of the Capitol buildings in handcuffs and take them down to the town square and hang these people for their treason. But you've got to go, you know, but that would have to be, they'd have to make a colossal mistake. I think the first step is an economic collapse that's coming. I fear the response to the economic collapse that they see coming will be the response that they have used in the past. That's a more reasonable and likely way to paper over that. It's diabolical, of course, but that's starting World War III.
Right.
So when you know that there's this massive economic collapse happening, you look back at the lead up to World War I, World War II, all these, you had massive economic uncertainty. And then, oh, I know what a good idea would be. If we had this gigantic war, then military industrial complex would be, would kick into high gear. The bankers would make a lot of money, print a lot of money. People, you know, wartime economies, all this. The president would probably get reelected because there's some weird psychological tactic where if you're the president during wartime, that then they tend to want to reelect you. They want to keep the consistency and continuity of having the same president. Why you would want to do that, I don't know, because the guy before just is the one that got you into the war. I'd want that guy out. But anyway, it's not the way it works. So I could envision a scenario in which World War III is used to paper over the financial collapse. And then they get in the aftermath of that and they throw their hands up and say, you know, like they go to the Rumsfeld and say, you know, mistakes were made, you know, there was an economic collapse. There was a World War III. I mean, what do you expect? Well, who started the economic collapse? Well, the bankers. As they always do. Who came to the rescue for World War III? Oh, the bankers did, because they printed more money. We changed the whole system. So I worry about World War III as a distraction, which is so gross to even think of it like that. I mean, you don't want to have World War III under any circumstances, period. But could you imagine a scenario in which it wasn't even an authentic aggression? It wasn't even really like two sides that were angry with each other. It was almost entirely provoked to be a distraction, to cover up for the fact that the bankers know that they have destroyed the economy and that this is some last ditch effort to not get blamed for it, or to find a way to profit from it, or to change the system in the aftermath of this, or to make to pivot to central bank digital currencies, which is what they wanted to do. Oh yeah, I mean, we had this bail-in legislation. We should probably talk about that in a little bit too. We had this bail-in legislation, and we had all this, and things went wrong. But we, you know, we stole all the money that was in your bank account because we legalized bail-ins a couple of years ago. But we're going to make it up to you. We've got a central bank digital currency. We'll make you whole again. See, here we are, us bankers. We came and saved the world from the problems that we created. You know, so that's where I see things going, is a financial, an organic and realistic and necessary and mathematically certain financial collapse that's most definitely coming.
Right.
And then a war to try to paper over, distract, place the blame on other people for that economic collapse. World War III scenario being used as the distraction to get you to not focus on the fact that the bank stole all your money with a bail-in.
Right. I'm currently reading Jim Marr's Fourth Reich, and Ooh. In that book, have you read that one?
No, I want to.
It's really good. But in that book, he quotes Stalin as saying the only way to bring in an authoritarian government is by war. That it's the last thing. There's all this like prep. But to really drive it home, you actually need a war to install that kind of government.
Sounds reasonable. I mean, it sounds diabolical, but
right.
But reasonable right. in their way of doing things. Yeah. And since I mentioned the bail-in, I want to bring this up just because we started with with talking about the mainstream media.
Yep.
And I want to make the comparison between what they did with the media and what they're doing, what I think they're going to do with banking. So if we go back to when Obama was president in 2012, he put together something called the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Yeah, which legalized propaganda to be used in America on Americans. And it invalidated the 1948 Smith-Mundt Act, which said you can't use propaganda against Americans. Obama and his administration went to the extraordinary step of changing that in order to legalize propaganda to be used on Americans by America. And I would suggest they did that because they intended to use some propaganda, right? You wouldn't change the laws to do that unless you wanted to legalize lying to people, right? So
did he have a forward-facing rationale for doing that, or was it just like slipped in the hopes that we wouldn't notice?
No, in fact, it was so unpopular, it couldn't get passed in and of itself. So what he did was he slid it into the 2013 National Defense Authorization Act and got it passed along with all the other nonsense that you know, you couldn't vote against that because then it was like, are you against freedom? You know, and like everyone's like, well, so they put it in the lawmaking sausage and passed it along with everything else because it was deeply unpopular. Because it was legalizing propaganda to be used in America on Americans. So
right.
With that in mind, and by the way, I'm not trying to say that there wasn't propaganda before 2012, because of course there was. But I'm saying they took the extraordinary step of legalizing it because they intended to use it. Now, follow me with that same line of thinking to the recent, within the last couple of years, bank bail-in legislation that has been passed. Now, we know about bailouts. Bailouts is when the government comes and bails out the bank with government money to help them, like in 2008. Bail-ins is when the bank is also in trouble again, but instead of taking an external source of money, a bailout from the government, they take your money in your bank account in their bank and they call it a bail-in. Because it never really left, and we just move it into our account from your account. Now, that is already legal. when you open a bank account, you are an unsecured creditor of that bank account. The bank is in first position, the bondholders are in second position, and you're in third position as an unsecured creditor. You basically have a bank account that's not yours. They can do that. They could have done that anyway without this new legislation that they put in within the last couple of years. They didn't really need that. Much like they were lying to you before 2012, they didn't really need to legalize propaganda. But I would suggest that they took the extraordinary step of legalizing a bank bail-in because they intend to have a bank bail-in. The same way they intended to lie to you and use propaganda with the Smith Modernization Act. They know what they're doing. They're codifying it and legalizing it in advance of that. So when we talk about economic collapses, central bank digital currencies, and things like that, I can tell you right now, I don't have a crystal ball. I'm not going into a Nostradamus meditative trance or anything like that. I'm telling you right now, there will be a bank bail-in. And the reason why I know that is because they legalized it. And the reason why they legalized it is because they are planning on using it. So if you've got your money in a bank right now, you need to reevaluate that relationship you have with the bank. And a lot of people will say, well, the FDIC has money on deposit to back up and insure my deposits up to $250,000 in the United States. Yes, that is true. That's what they say. But here's the problem with that. If it's a regional bank that goes bust, the FDIC can step in and probably make everybody fine. But they really only have 2% of all deposits on hand, if we're being honest with what the FDIC has. So in a systemic banking collapse, not a small regional bank that just, you know, the manager stole all the money and disappeared with his girlfriend to Tahiti or something, you'd be fine in that case. But if you have a banking industry collapse, much like I said, you're in third position already. If you do get your money, the FDIC has about 2% of all deposits on hand. So in the event that you, in third position, do get made whole, you're only going to get 2 cents on the dollar. Now, the 2 cents on the dollar that the FDIC does have, it's all invested in bonds that are upside down. Mm-hmm. So they're totally insolvent. The backstop, the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, that is supposed to be there to backstop your deposits that you have in your bank, is insolvent right now. So if you've got money in the bank account, you're going to get wiped out. The bank's going to steal it because they can, because it's not your money, it's theirs. If you question that, they legalized it a couple years ago just to make sure. They're telling you in advance what they're going to do by legalizing something like this. And if you think the FDIC is going to come to your rescue, they're broke. So this is a recipe for disaster. Now here's where the speculation kicks in on my part. I can speculate and envision a scenario in which all those things happen very quickly. And then the government says, well, we've got a solution to this problem. It's not the best solution, but we do have a record of where you guys were in terms of like what you had in your accounts before all this happened, before the big collapse. And what we can do, it's not perfect, but what we can do is we can give you that money back in the form of a central bank digital currency. And that central bank digital currency will be issued by the Fed. Maybe it's the Fed coin. Maybe it'll be issued by the bank itself. Maybe it'll be a Chase bank coin or whatever, Bank of America coin. It will be programmable, trackable. They can set it to expire. They'll know everything that you spend it on. They can set it to only work in certain stores. They can set it to work only on certain items. Good luck ever buying a gun,
right,
or red meat or bullets or an airplane ticket to Shanghai or wherever. You're not going anywhere.
Or your book.
My book. Yeah, man, my book. You want to donate some money on YouTube? You want to tip your content creator? Oh, you can't tip those people.
Right.
You know, so you can use it on the company store. And what is the company store? Well, on the, you know, back when the Rockefellers were doing all the oil rigs and the mining and all that stuff, they would set up a store for all of the workers and they could shop at the company, like the general store, except it was owned by the company and it was their store and they sold the things that you need. So they would cash your paycheck and then you'd spend it in their store on their, you know, so it all kind of works. Now I can also envision a scenario in which the company store is all of the partners of the private partners of the World Economic Forum, where it's Amazon and Walmart and these, you know, big stores. But Bob's Lumber down on Main Street in your town, you can't use your money there. Are you kidding me? That guy might be an anti-vaxxer. He might be a communist for all we know. We just can't, with this, the money only works at the company store. So again, the tail end of that is speculation on my part, the company store component of it. But it's extrapolating. But the other stuff is all legal.
I mean,
and,
I feel like you're.
They'll do
oh,
it.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm just like saying, they'll. If it's legal, they will do it. It goes back to the Henry Kissinger. The illegal we do immediately. The unconstitutional takes a little longer.
I mean, I feel like your extrapolation feels on point because those were all the businesses that were propped up during lockdowns when it wasn't safe to go to Bob's Lumber, but it wasn't a problem to go to Walmart Lumber, the virus being so smart that it only
so smart.
Exists in mom and pop stores. I was recently in Colorado where you live, and so many of the places said they didn't take cash. Now, when they pull that here in New Mexico, I know I've read our state constitution. I know that's illegal. I push back loudly. Is that legal in Colorado? Is cash
not
legal?
So. No, I think you have to take cash. I think that's legal. And I think that in every state you have to take cash, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. Maybe I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, every this state is constitution is different.
This is an authoritarian state. Governor Jared Polis is a, you know, he's a dual citizen. He's an Israel first guy that has been very vocal about that. He's a gay gentleman too. He's the pronouns, LGBT flag. He's all those things rolled into one. He's one of the wealthiest people in the country. And it's funny, they always want to get into politics too. They're just such good natured people. They want to help everyone, don't you know? And so I don't hold out much hope that, that Colorado will do the right thing in situations like that, because their administration is run by commies. Jenna Griswold was the one that was trying to get Trump off the ballot. I'm no Trump supporter either, but I mean, you know, you do those things when you're authoritarians, not when you're the good guys. I mean, those are the things you do when you're losing desperately, and you kind of have to bring in and try dirty tricks. So I think Colorado will probably be a bad state for some of that. But it's interesting that you mentioned that. I'm gonna have to keep an eye out on that now and try to. I try to use cash as much as I can anyway. So, I haven't had any problems with it, but I'll keep you posted.
Oh, good. Yeah, do keep me posted, because apparently every state has their own constitution, and if cash is named as legal tender in the state constitution, then businesses cannot refuse it, or we can take the goods free of charge. If they're not going to take our cash and they say we don't take cash and it's in the state constitution, we can just take the stuff and leave and the law is on our side. Oh, wow. But I feel like in terms of speaking out, like from my perspective at this stage of the game, since we lost the face coverings and the injections and all of that, that it would be really helpful if everyone would speak up to defend cash.
Yeah. Yeah. Cash is necessary for sure. And you saw a little glimpse during 2020 when they were like, well, you know, we have to get rid of it because COVID lives on it and it's dirty and everything. I was like, that's your rationale for it, is that it's dirty? Then we should ban handrails. And I mean, what are we doing? Like, you get on a train and they've got the pole that you hold on to. Oh, we got to get rid of those, because those are probably dirty too. I mean, where does it end? Cash is dirty. Okay. I'm sure it is. I'm sure there's unspeakable things on that, but we'd have to ban toilets and countertops and all the things that are dirty. I mean, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. But
yeah, it's crazy.
But we recognize it's not about logic. It's not about fairness. It's not about science. It's about compliance, right?
Correct.
It's about, there's no science behind any of this. I tell you to stand on the dot 6 feet away from the person on the other dot, not because there's any science to it, but because I'm telling you what to do and I want you to do it.
Right. Right.
And so that is the reason why I never stood on the dot. That's the reason why I never wore the mask and I went the wrong way down the grocery store aisle. That's the reason why when the person was standing in front of the Walmart, standing there with a box of masks, and I Bill Lumberged her and just walked right around as fast as I could. She was, sir, you forgot your mask. Chase me then. Chase me into this store on a minimum wage paycheck and confront me. I'm going to ruin your day. So I went into all of this with a total disregard for any sort of authority. I tried to be as difficult as I could with as many people as I could. I felt like we needed that. And I do remember the cash situation coming out in 2020. And I was like, you know, cause I just got back from Acapulco back in 2020, where I'm listening to all the crypto guys talk about this. And we know, and one of the topics was they want to ban cash. So you get back and then a couple of weeks later, you start hearing the talk about like, oh, well, we got to get rid of cash or anything. And you go, oh, I know what this is about. This isn't about safety, health, or anything. This is about the fewer options you have to transact freely without the knowing eyes of the government. They hate that. They want to get rid of that. They'll tell you that cash is used for money laundering. Well, yeah, of course. I mean, how did you guys in Washington, D.C. wash all that drug money that you guys were making from selling cocaine in the 80s? Of course, we know that cash is used for money laundering. Who taught right. the general public how to do it? The American government. They're the biggest exactly. money launderers around.
Isn't that what PEPFAR is? Like the government's money laundering arm?
It's illegal when we do it. It's legal when they do it. It's
correct.
Just this
rules
is just,
for thee, but not for we.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the dual citizenship, which I think is insane. How many of our alleged public yeah. servants are Israeli citizens? And I'm not interested in like the usual Israel-Palestine conversation. I really don't have a dog in that race. It seems like a giant psyop. But with all your knowledge, like, is there a metaphysical realm to why everyone wants Israel? Is there a Stargate there? Is there a time travel portal there? Like, what is the real deal? The real deal around Israel?
You know, it's got to be the most polarizing place on the planet. You know, it yeah. really is. I mean, people have very strong feelings about that place. I don't know if it's the geography surrounding it. I don't know if it's the ideology surrounding it. You know, I think that the Israelis and the Americans from a cultural standpoint have a very similar foundings. You know, they took land that wasn't theirs and pushed the indigenous people off of it and didn't apologize. And whether it's piles of dead Palestinians or piles of buffalo bones that, you know, that the Americans forced off of cliffs so that the Indians would be starved out. I mean, we've heard about the smallpox blankets and all that stuff. I mean, we yeah. have a lot of tactics in common with the Israelis. We, the American Empire, I don't put us in that category. Of course, we weren't the ones doing it. So I think there's an ideological alignment with the bloodthirsty nature of the American government, with the bloodthirsty nature of the Israeli government. There's a lot of, if it were a Venn diagram, there'd be a lot of interlocking and overlapping between the two, the way they think, the way they view the humanity, the way they view people that don't look like them or act like them or have the same religion as them or whatever. It's repulsive and disgusting, but that particular piece of land has been very sought after for a long time. I think that there's multiple layers to this too, because there's the, you took my land part, which is a big one, right? Then there's the, you believe one religion and we believe another religion, right? There's all of that. And then you mentioned it. You mentioned that there's an esoteric layer to this as well. There's a whole nother side of things that you start to get into a, you start to be in a gray area, down a rabbit hole that people are very uncomfortable talking into. And that is, what about on a subatomic level? What are we talking about here? Because there are some places in the world that seem to be very much, very important to the people that control our history, our knowledge of our history, and the things that we believe and the things that we write in our books, whether they be history books or biblical books or whatever, our religious texts, and we believe certain things because we're told to believe them. But the people that tell us to believe them are not the people I would ever really trust. And I start to get into some of this ancient history, you know, like what's really going on. You know, you read Fingerprints of the Gods by Graham Hancock and you go, oh my goodness, like, okay, we understand that they're lying to us about just about everything today. Why would our history books be any different? Why would these ancient biblical books be any different? My goodness, they've got, you know, you've got a Bible that's rewritten by a king who comes in and says, no, 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 we got to take these parts out. We got to change this stuff. That doesn't sound like the word of God to me. That sounds like government fuckery. That sounds like the media getting involved and changing the text of, you know, I mean, it's just ancient media doing their thing of trying to control people and keep you in the dark. I had the privilege of going to Egypt when I was 16, and wow. My mom and I went, we spent a week there in the pyramids. You could go in, like you could go in and go up the stairs and go into the chambers and everything. You can sit there. You could sit on the, I don't know how it is now, but this was a while ago, but you could just sit there. And,
that does it for the first half of my juicy conversation with Charlie Robinson. As you are inspired to tune into the second half of our conversation, you can find that over at both my Patreon and my Locals communities. Those addresses are dannycatz.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycatz. Take your pick. It's where I post all of my second half conversations, post-show throwdowns, and oodles of bonus content. As you are inspired to learn more about my quantum languaging work, my books, my courses, my recently launched Pop Propaganda digital course for teens and grownups alike, and how you can work with me one-on-one in the coaching capacity, or how to work with me as a consultant, bring me into your business, have me help optimize your communications culture. You can find more about me at dannycatz.com as well as quantumlanguaging.com. Lastly, I am urging you to sign up for my newsletter at dannycatz.com to ensure that we can stay in touch regardless of the big tech thought policing, suppression, censorship, etc. All right, folks, thanks so much for remembering that every word matters, that you, yes, you, are omniscopic amazingness. Have a rockin' day.
And for clicking that subscribe button, for liking, for sharing, for commenting, and for leaving some kind words as a review, as you are authentically inspired. As you are receiving any value from my podcast, as you dig it, as you listen regularly, consider supporting me on Patreon and or Locals, where for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half podcast interviews, as well as oodles of bonus content. Your support really goes a long way in supporting me as a journalist and an independent content creator navigate her way through a really crunchy time in terms of free speech. And as you are wanting to learn more about my work in the world, my books, my products, my quantum languaging coaching and consulting, you can find me at dannycatz.com as well as quantumlanguaging.com. And if you're not down with a membership patronage platform and want to send me one-time donation, you can use the Bitcoin link if it actually appears on your podcast listening platform. You could also send me a one-time donation by way of PayPal at dannycatz@pm.me, or by way of Venmo, where my username is Sadie Bloom. Again, your support means the world and makes a massive, massive difference when it comes to continuing to share this work with the world. Thank you for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that you are omniscopic amazingness and for having a rockin' day. See you next time, superstars.